in Jesus' name. And all God's people said, amen. All right, we're in this series called Let Me Ask You a Question. And of course, it is from the perspective of God asking us a question. Last week, we dealt with the first question in the Bible. It was from God to his creation. Adam, where are you? And it's a powerful, if you didn't watch it online or you weren't here, you can watch it online. It's called Adam, where are you? It's a first question God asks. He never asks a question because he needs to know the answer. He asks the question because we need to give the answer. We need to have a moment of a mindful self-awareness. Where am I? And so many people last week, I think the Holy Spirit busted them and said, where are you? Orient yourself. Remember we said, you'll never get to where you want to go till you first know where you are. So if you want to walk with Jesus, you want to be a Christ follower, you better find out where you are, because you can't get there in your own strength. If you start with, I'm away from God, I don't know where I am in my faith, that's an honest place. Now you can get somewhere. But if you don't know where you are, you're not going to get there. So we started with, where are you? This question is kind of I don't know what the word I would use is, shocking, because you may think it's not a big deal question. The question is going to be asked by Jesus to his disciples, and it's the one occasion or miracle, don't blurt out the answer, it's the one occasion or miracle that is recorded in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's the only miracle that's recorded in all four Gospels. So, Bible trivia test, you win nothing, but we're going to play it. But if you lose, you stay after church and you have to help put the chairs up and clean up the coffee cups and messes the people. All right, what's the miracle? Let me see a hand. See a hand. Ray? You're in it, buddy. You know, we had five wrong answers in the first service. It just goes to show you they're not the sharpest knives in the drawer. Don't let that word out. You've just had more coffee. But anyway, 100% right. What do we have for him, Johnny? Nothing. Okay, but anyway. The five loaves, two fishes, feeding the 5,000 men that were accompanied by women. So probably a miracle of over 10,000 people being fed. So we're going to look at mainly in Mark. Each gospel writer gives a little bitty different nuance to the story, and I love some of them really help give it more flavor, if you will. So we're going to start in Mark, and then we're going to bounce over to John and see his little difference that he brings out. But in Mark chapter 6, we'll start in the story about verse 32. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. This is Jesus and his disciples. They're burnt out, need a break. Verse 33. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, remember, 10,000 people. We're going to find that in a little bit. That's a huge crowd. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Now, this is the story is anchored in displaying Jesus as the good shepherd. He's the pastor. He looked on them. Now, this is a motley crowd. This isn't the who's who of town. These are some bad people. These are some broken people. And so he looks at them. He doesn't see them by who they are. He sees them by what they need. He recognizes that they're like sheep that have no one to guide them. Now, when you are your own boss, you get to be your own shepherd. And when you're your own shepherd, you get to figure out how to do life on your own. And some of you are living that way. And as Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? You're a crappy shepherd. Let me just help you. I'm a bad shepherd. I lead myself into deep ditches. I fall off of cliffs. And if you're a sheep that follows other sheep, then you're worse than having no shepherd, because you're following dumber. I mean, sheep are stupid. If Ralph is leading the sheep and Ralph's running off a cliff, the rest of the sheep will go, I don't know where Ralph's going, but let's follow him because he seems like he knows where he's going. And that's just many people that are just led by the crowd, what their friends do. They're just wandering around with you. If you hang out with people that are lost sheep, they're not going to lead you to the truth. They're not going to lead you to green pastures. They're not going to lead you to a better life. Whoever you're hanging around is helping shepherd you. So if you're not around other believers, if you're not around people that can influence and know how to follow the shepherd. So Jesus, the story is set in the context. He's a shepherd. They're lost sheep. They're hungry. They're empty. They don't know where they are. They don't know how lost they are. And he has compassion. You'll see a contrast to the story between Jesus and his disciples. He has compassion. The disciples, not so much. And in verse 34, I read that, verse 35. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place." And they said, it's already late, verse 36. Send them away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. And, you know, it's basically, get rid of them. They're a nuisance. We can't do anything with them. You know, it's just these are, they've assessed the situation, and they've assessed themselves, and they've said, just get rid of them. That's the solution. We can't solve the problem. Get rid of them. And Jesus has a little different perspective of the situation. And so it says in verse 37, he says, you give them something to eat. Now think about this. Jesus looks at his disciples and says, hey guys, come here. You guys are responsible to feed them. They're going to lose their minds on thinking how. Now, I want you to put in the context what John brings out about this, why he says it this way. So in John chapter 6, same story, different version. John says in chapter 6, verse, I think we'll pick up verse 5. We'll start there. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he says to Philip, now Philip lived in that area, came from there. He says to Philip, where shall we get the bread to feed these people? What restaurant's still open? Can you call out for pizza? Let's see, we're going to need about 5,000 pizzas, big, extra large. And Philip is like, where are you going to get the food? Because remember, he's already told them, you're going to feed them. Mark brings that out. John brings out. Now, why does Jesus say this? Verse 6. He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. You better know, when God asks you a question, he's not trying to come up with a plan. He's asking a question because he wants you to become part of his plan. It's a test. Now, the devil tempts to make you sin and disobey God. God tests to help you grow, mature, and become a better Christ follower. You go through tests regularly. And sometimes they're bigger tests, like Job went through, huge life tests. Sometimes they're just smaller tests to see if you can become a Christian in your car. There are all kinds of tests that he puts, you know, those drivers from Michigan in front of you. He finally said Michigan. Thank God. That's because Ohio State beat a girls' school yesterday, and I didn't want to gloat over them, so we didn't give them. So we're claiming that record. We beat a girls' school. We're tough. Test. What? When he tests you, the Lord's trying to say, it was a test to Adam to say, where are you? That's a test. Are you going to be honest? Are you going to be mindful? Are you going to be self-aware that you're not in a good place? He says, you feed him. Where are you going to get? Now, he knows what he's going to do. I love that about the Lord. He's never panicked. He's never without a plan. You may not be in on it. You don't know what he's about to do. And he's putting pressure on Philip. Now, let me just continue this story. I kind of jump ahead a little bit because I don't want to go back and forth. But John continues and says, you know, Philip says, you know, 8 months' wages, couldn't buy enough food for everybody to have a little bite. Verse 8, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up and says, here's a boy. He has 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far can they go among so many? So I want to come back to the boy in a minute. I want to go back to Mark. Jesus says in Mark, he says, you give them something to eat. They, Mark 6:37, they said to him, that would take 8 months of man's wages. Are we going to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? And he, then he asked the question, how many loaves do you have? Not where are you, but where's the bread? How much you got? Now, again, not that Jesus doesn't already know the answer. They're going to have to do an inventory on what do they have. Remember, he's told them, you're going to feed them. Now, he's making them look at the possibilities, the inventory of what do they have that will enable them to feed 10,000 people. So you're probably up on what's going on in this test. It's a revelation of their inadequacies so that Jesus can reveal his sufficiencies. And if you don't see it that way, you're going to miss the whole point of the story. They're being forced to see how limited they are. They're doing an honest evaluation of, and they have a responsibility Jesus gave them to do something that they're realizing they're completely unable to do. It's going to take a miracle. Yes, that's where he's getting them. It's going to take Jesus to be Jesus to get them to do what Jesus told them to do. It's like telling a crippled man, get up and walk. He can't get up and walk. He can't heal himself. He can't create a miracle. Blind man, see. He can't just force his eyes to be healed and open. When he makes the command, he gives the grace that goes with the command that enables the miracle to happen. In this case, he could have fed everybody without any help. Yes? He fed million plus people for 40 years in a desert without McDonald's. 40 years without a pizza. 40 years of bread, manna, some angel, whatever it was, baked in heaven. You know, did you know God was a baker? Come on. All through the Bible, bread's a big deal. He bakes. Nothing smells. One of my buddies said one of the worst things he ever bought in his life was an automatic bread oven thing. He would set it on at night, wake up in the morning, fresh bread. He said he gained 10 pounds having that bread machine. It just, if something smells better than fresh bread, I don't know what it is. It's a, and so, you know, he feeds a million people with manna. He feeds Israelites with the Passover as they broke bread. He fed them in the temple with the bread of presence. Melchizedek that I'm writing about shows up with bread and wine. God loves to bake bread. He baked Jesus in the oven of Mary's womb. He was born in the house of bread in Bethlehem. He came as the bread of life. Jesus is, in this story, is revealing himself as the provider of what we need spiritually to eat. But he also cares about our physical needs. He doesn't mock these people. He doesn't belittle them like the disciples. But he says, give them something to eat. What do you got? How many loaves you got? What's the inventory? Well, they're looking around. What do you got? I got enough. Somehow, some mama, I'm going to say she was a single mama. She got up that morning. She had five, and when it says loaf, it's a biscuit. I wanted to call that, but they wouldn't let me. But that's what it is. It's a dinner roll. It's a biscuit. It's a little bitty biscuit. And she got up and said, her little boy ain't leaving the home without something to eat. She probably had nothing left for her, but she gave him what was left. Five biscuits and two little sardines. These aren't grouper. This isn't mahi-mahi. This isn't sushi. This is a little bitty fish. It's a sardine size. Two sardines and five little, and it's the cheaper, it's barley, not wheat. Barley is the poor person's bread. This is poor biscuits, but it's all mama had and her boy who she let go follow the crowd to go be around Jesus. Now, I don't know who this boy is, but I love him. And I love his mother even better, that she packed a lunch. He's the only one bagged lunch in it. He shows up. Somehow, I think it went down this way. I don't know. I don't think Peter says, hey, you got food in that bag? Give it here. Let me give this to Jesus for you, you know. I don't think it went down that way. I think he tugged on Peter or one of them, and Peter's like, son, don't bother me. We got an intense situation here. We've got to figure out a big problem. Just go be a kid. Get it going. But Mr. Peter, I said, leave me alone. It's on us to feed 10,000 people. We don't know what we're going to do. We're in a jam here. But I have something. And he brings everything. Don't you love this boy? He brings everything he's got. He's not like, I'll give you a biscuit, Mr. Peter. I'll share my lunch with you. I'm giving it all. Who raised that boy? That's a good mama. To give your heart to Jesus, son or daughter. To not be hoarder or stingy, but be generous with what you... When you raise children to be generous, you have to model generosity for them to learn to be generous. You can't just tell your children to be generous. We did a thing almost every year at Christmas time. We'd have our children pull out their favorite toy and give it to somebody. Now, we didn't make them do it. Give me that glow worm, and it's evil anyway. You're giving that to somebody else. Give me that broken doll. One of the daughters had a doll that the head would come off, and we called it Baby No Head. And it didn't go over big, and she loved Baby No Head. But you weren't allowed to give Baby No Head away because you had to have don't give your crap to Jesus. That's not the point. People love, let's have a flea market and everybody give what they don't want to Jesus. No, let's have a flea market and give what you love the most to Jesus. Let's do a flea market like that. So we modeled it. We give cars away. We never traded a car in. We always give them away. Now they'd have 100,000 miles, but there's nothing more fun than giving somebody a car that doesn't have a car and trust God. We trained our children to give gifts to those that had less fortunate. So this little boy was raised right. He gives his lunch and all of a sudden, hey, we got 5 biscuits and 2 little sardines. But what are these among so many? They've answered Jesus' question, how many loaves do you have? 5 and 2 fishes. And then in verse, they blurt out the answer, verse 38. Now you know the backstory from John. When they found out, they said, 5 and 2. Jesus said, have the people sit down in groups on the... Say it with me, green grass. Mark's the only one brings this out. Remember the story started with Jesus being the shepherd? Psalm 23, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. Why? Because he's going to feed you. He makes you lie. Do you know that word make in Psalm 23 is a key word because sheep are so anxious, they're so worried about their surroundings and their fear and anxiety that they rarely sit down and just enjoy a good meal. They have to be forced to sit down sometimes. And so Jesus says, tell these people to sit down. He's acting as the shepherd. Now, I got a little picture here that Pastor Jason took of my wife and I when we were in Israel a lifetime ago. I don't know how many years ago that was. It was a long time. But let's throw that picture up. This is the Mount of Beatitudes where he spoke and probably where he multiplied the loaves and the fishes. So this in the distance is the Sea of Galilee. That's the water. And this is us in the far right corner. I'm worshiping the Lord. I didn't know they were taking our picture. And I'm worshiping the Lord. My wife's sitting. We're sitting there. My favorite place in all of Israel. It's not a church. It's just you could see the 10,000 people sitting in the field. And it's like a natural amphitheater because you could literally talk there and down all the way down to the road. You can hear it. It's just you could picture that field with 10,000 people in it. And a little boy giving the disciples his lunch. And Jesus has them sit down. Now there's a holy expectancy happening in the room. God's about to do something. They don't know how he's going to do it. But it says this. Let's follow it back in the scriptures here. And so it says, after they sit down in groups of hundreds and fifties, very organized, verse 4, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, which implies that first it was, what for him, he didn't snatch it out of their hands. It meant he received it. They gave it to him. They took what they had. This is the key to the whole story, one of them, is it's not about how much you have of whatever it is, money, talent, strength, energy, wisdom, love. It doesn't matter how much you have. It's whose hands it's in. The five and the two in their hands was five and two. But when they took that and gave it to Jesus, it says he took it. He received it. He didn't snatch it. He received it. It was what we would call a love offering, willing. Nobody said, give me your lunch. What if you had a Jesus like that? Hey, I smell bread. That boy's got bread. Get that bread from him. No, this is Jesus that blessed the mother to have the bread, to bless the son to get the bread, so that the son could come to the mountain with 10,000 people and somehow be hanging around Jesus and give his bread. Now it's in the hands of Jesus. Look what he does with this. This is like communion-like language. It's how the kingdom works. Verse 41, taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looks up to heaven, gave thanks. We get the word Eucharist from here, which means a giving of thanks, speaking well. He's blessing the bread. He's thanking the Father for it. This is the daily bread. Give us, and he taught us to pray, give us this day our daily bread. I'll come back to that in a minute. Just an interesting side note, thinking about bread. When Satan tempted Jesus for 40 days after he hadn't eaten, and he said, if you're the Son of God, turn these stones into what? Bread. Basically, he's saying, aren't you the bread baker? Aren't you the God that makes bread? Why don't you make yourself some bread? You're hungry. Jesus never worked a miracle to satisfy his own needs. That's pretty powerful if you think about it. If you were Jesus, are you going to just say, no, I'm going to go without. I could make bread and I'm hungry, but I'm going to honor the Father and I'm not doing anything until the Father says, this is what I want you to do. If you spit on me and I was Jesus, I'd say, you're blind. And by the way, you're going to drag that right leg behind you everywhere you go. And your saliva is going to dry up. You won't be able to swallow anymore. You know what it's like to have a dry mouth? You ever wake up dry mouth? Oh, my God, you can't even smack your lips. You won't spit on anybody again because you won't be able to swallow. Are you glad I'm not Jesus yet? Oh, you're just saying that, Pastor. No, I'm not. I know what I am without Jesus. It takes a miracle for me to love people. I don't naturally love people. And you think you've been a pastor for almost 50 years? Yeah. You know how hard it's been? I've only got one little over a year left, December 6, 2026. I got to hold on. Loving you is about to kill me. I mean, it's just a job. People will suck the life out of you. I feel like a nursing mother most of the time, you know, just... Oh, he's just saying that, Fred, isn't he? No, he really doesn't like people that much. But Jesus is mean and makes him like people. And you know what? That was been my journey. I didn't start pastoring because I love people. No, I'm not saying there aren't some that are that way. I started pastoring because I wanted God to use me. And I offered him my five loaves and two fishes, and it landed me in a church at 22 years of age. And not only did I not like people, they didn't like me. And so it was a hate affair right from the beginning. And you don't become what we sang about in that song, I'm changing. That doesn't happen because you're a good person. It happens because God works on you. God challenges you. God tests you. God says, I'm going to teach you to grow. That person isn't going anywhere until you learn to love them. You know how many people I've hidden from over the years, and they'll pump me down, Pastor Jamie. I'm like, run. You go to a grocery store and you hear them from a distance, Pastor Jamie. I'm running that cart. I guess I'm pulling my hoodie over my head, and I was like, Oh, God, please, no. I got nothing left. They're going to want something out of me. I want a pastor that's really nice. Don't stay here long. But I know somebody who really is nice and who really loves you. And my job has been along the way to point people to fall in love with him. And I disappoint people all the time, but hopefully I disappoint them into the arms of Jesus. It was, I can't count on him all the time. Good. Learn to count on Jesus. It's like the guy that said to me one time in a message, I said, we take the phone off the hook before cell phones, before pagers, before computers, blah, blah, blah. You had a phone. It's actually the only way someone could get hold of you or come to your door. And so we would eat because people call, they wait. It's like, all right, hold, hold. All right, it's dinner time at the Stilsons. Call. And that phone would ring and it'd be some pastor. My food's getting cold. No, we just took the phone off the hook and laid it on the counter. I said that in church. Now, you got to understand, this is a lifetime ago. Some guy challenged me. What are we going to do? Our pastor's got the phone off the hook. What are we going to do if we need you? I said to him in I can go down that smart Alec. I said, well, you might have to call on Jesus. Well, buddy, he did not take that. That's what we pay you for. That's what your job and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, It's just the reality is that these disciples responded like most of us would. They're focused on what they don't have, not on who they have. And they're focused on what they can do with it in their hands. They're not focused on what would happen if we got that to Jesus' hands. Nobody suggested, Lord, maybe you could do something here. You've put it on us. We're going to come back to you. We need help. Jesus, would you help us? What's the plan? Lord, what? Nobody suggested Jesus could do something. It didn't enter their minds. Our first thought, call the doctor, take a pill. Our first thought isn't Jesus, help. That's okay to call the doctor, but call Jesus first. Don't call the, I want to say to people, have you called Jesus before you called me? Call Jesus. He'll never take his phone off the hook. He'll never look at the call and go, oh, so-and-so, boy, they'll suck you dry. You can't suck him dry. You can't wear him out. You can't use up his resources. He's about to unpack them to these bumbling disciples that never even thought God might have a plan. God might have a solution. God might want to do something with, how many loaves do you have? Well, I only have 5 and 2 fish. And what is this? And he says, I'll tell you what it is. It's miracle-making material. It's seed that you can put in the soil and build a harvest. Let me tell you, listen to me. Some of you know you're a 5 loaves and 2 fishes person. And it's not humility to use that as an excuse to do nothing in the kingdom of God. Humility isn't, oh, I don't know, I can't, I just don't have much, and No, that's pride turned inside out. Humility is, I don't have anything much, Lord, 5, but let me tell you something. If I can get it into your hands, you can do something I could never dream about. You can do something with my life, my resources, my time, my gifts, my energy, if I could just get it in your hands. Now that's the fight. That's the journey. Whose hands is it in? Most of us are like the gun commercial. You can have my gun when you peel it out of my cold, dead fingers. You can have my 5 loaves and 2 fishes when you peel them off my cold. And he will one day. The guy that built bigger barns and bigger barns and bigger barns. And the Bible says, you fool, this night your soul will be required of you. You aren't going to keep it. You know, when you give stuff to Jesus, you didn't lose it. And many people can't get even in giving financially. They feel like they've lost something. That's how the devil wants you to feel. When you give up something that God calls on you to give up, You haven't lost. You've sown into his hands, and watch what he'll do when you give him your little. It becomes what it's the way this church has been led for all of these years between my wife and I. We are people of five loaves and two fishes. Listen to me. You'll see it in a moment. He's going to bless it, break it, and he multiplies it. And then he says, let me just show you this, and I'll come back to that. You'll think I forget, but ADD people can come back around. Give thanks. He broke the loaves. Then he gave the word. Then he gave them to the disciples to set before the people. He gave. The word gave there is in the imperfect tense in the original language. It meant he kept on giving. He kept on and kept on and kept on and kept on and kept on. Why? Because it wasn't one big giant explosion of bread that went over 10,000 people. He's filling baskets. Now, I don't know how this happens. It's somewhat hidden. John Wimmer, that founded the Vineyard, modeled this a lifetime ago for me, and it's always stuck in my mind. And because he would say, it kind of went down like this. He blessed the bread. He took the baskets, and he fill them, and then they'd go out. But then they'd run out, and they'd have to go back, and Jesus would come back. He'd do his thing, and he'd bring them another basket full. They never knew how he was making that bread. He wasn't putting it in an oven. He was multiplying. It's a supernatural miracle. It's a creative miracle. But it was not about Jesus filled and Peter gave out and his basket kept filling. Peter gives out, his basket refills. No, Peter gives out, they're like, oh, I didn't get any. Peter goes, I got nothing. I got to go back and get some more. That's how the kingdom works. It's not like Jesus, he said, pray for daily bread. Wouldn't you rather pray for monthly bread? Wouldn't that be easier? Stockpile it. I'll come back to you at the end of the month, Lord, when I'm out of bread. Maybe that's why he said daily bread. Because he wants you to come back when you eat the bread. Jesus, I'd like to have some more. Good. He doesn't fault you for that. But if he gave you so much that you didn't need him, if he gave you so much that you could stockpile it, all you would do was end up worshiping the stockpile, not the God that made the pile. You get with me? You got to get it in his hands. But then he's going to give it back to you and have you give it away. But then you're going to run out again. And you're going to got to come back to Jesus. It wasn't Peter that multiplied the loaves and the fishes. If the people would have been saying, Peter, oh, you're so amazing. You're so wonderful. You're the bread and the fish giver. Peter would be like, dude, listen, I had nothing. All I had was an empty basket. I keep bringing it back to Jesus. It's Jesus. It's Jesus. You don't do the kingdom of God because you got it. I showed up this morning. I gave God at 5 this morning, sleepless night. I sat on my face before God, and I said, God, I don't even think I have 2 loaves and a fish today. I got nothing. That's not some false humility. That's just reality. And I said, God, you're going to have to, I'll give you what I got. But Lord, you're going to have to bless it. You're going to have to break it and multiply it. And you know what? I've been doing that for 50 years. He's faithful. He never goes, didn't get to the store today. The oven's closed. Come back tomorrow. You never have less. God never has less. Let's say it this way. When he meets needs. Let's say somebody, I don't want to use that analogy. Skip it. Okay, move on. Okay. You got to be selective when you have these options come in your head. You, when somebody else gets a lot, doesn't mean there's less for you to get. Are you with me on that? That's the way this country works. Well, you got a bunch. I didn't get it. I want to get from what you got because there's only so much. That's not the kingdom. The kingdom is whatever God blesses here doesn't have less to bless here. Just as it's kind of like having children. The first child, you have 1,000 photos. The second child, 500. The third child, maybe 100. The fourth child, you lost your camera and your mind and you don't have any pictures. And isn't that true? Anybody the youngest here out of several? Is it true that their siblings have, you know, they got it all first? I have a grandson that's smart enough. He's getting married to first out of 10 grandchildren. He's not the oldest. He just knows he's going to suck grandma and grandpa dry, and that when the other ones go to get married, they're going to have a little less, and then the next one's going to have a little less. Last one married, we're going to be like, I got 5 loaves and 2 fishes. You can have that. You better get married first. Get them. Suck them dry. Go for it. Be the first in. Get it all. But when you go to God and his riches, it didn't deplete his bank account to multiply 50 of our multiply 5 loaves and 2 fishes to feed 10,000. He didn't have less. In fact, at the end of the story, how many basketfuls did they collect that were left over? 12. Now, most believe that the 12 baskets went to the 12 disciples. I don't buy that. I think God said to Philip, hey, buddy, you didn't trust me. I want you to give half your basket to the little boy that you took his lunch. You think that little boy didn't go home with a whole basket of loaves and fishes? Come on. One of them, he might have taken all 12 of them home. I mean, he's the man. And who did he become? Who did that? That's when I look at our youth and our children that'll come in a minute, and I see God at work in their lives, and they're learning to trust God with their loaves and fishes. Who are they going to be in 10, 20, 30 years from now? Come on. Who are they going to be? Who are they going to be? Changing the world, school teachers that love Jesus, and police officers that fight for justice, and hardworking carpenters, and pastors, and missionaries, worship leaders, children ministry. Why? Because they put in their hands, their 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Remember, it's not how much you have, it's whose hands it's in. Now, when you're full of anxiety and fear and despair, you don't have it in his hands. When it's in his hands, you have a confidence that, Lord, it's on you. I've lived this way my whole life, learning to trust God. This is like being a farmer. Pastoring is like being a farmer. You don't know when there's droughts. You don't know when the seeds are going to be in, bugs get in the seeds and the harvest. And you're just dependent on God and his goodness. And let me just say, I've seen the Lord's faithfulness. We've given him as a church 5 loaves and 2 fishes through the whole journey of this church. When we didn't have, we gave what we had. And God's been so good to us. We have a building paid for. We have no debt. We're blessing ministries and giving things away. Why? Because he's taking our loaves and fish. Now, there'll come a day on your watch, not mine, that you're going to have to take those loaves and fishes and take a new hill. Don't become lazy depending on what God did in the past. God's got some new hills that'll come for this church. It's just not going to be on our watch. We've climbed our last hill. We'll be turning the church over to Pastor Jason and the team. But we're not going to create any new anything between now and then. That doesn't mean I don't trust God. It's going to take all my loaves and fishes to get to the finish line. Let me just help you. And be nice. Finish and be nice. Finish and don't people off. Be a good pastor for another year. Hold. Bite the lip. Be nice. Be kind. Hold. But Lord, my basket's empty. Come on back. Come on back. I'll fill it again. Now, when you stop giving it out, he's going to stop filling your basket. If you say, I'm going to keep this for me, okay, you're going to eat it up. It's called eating your seed. Now you got nothing left. You're not giving out, the supply stops. When did Jesus stop feeding the people? Who knows the answer? When? Let me see a hand. When did he stop? All right, in the back. When? Who were? How many of them? No. A-L-L. All of them were set. They ate as much as they wanted. You know there were some big boys out there that eating some biscuits. Come on, get a little honey on that biscuit. Brought some fried chicken added to it. They got crumbs all over. This is Jesus bread. You think it tasted like Burger King biscuits? No, it's Jesus bread. This was baked in heaven. You can imagine that fish tasted like the most amazing, just incredible. This is God in the kitchen. This is good stuff. Here's the principle, and I'll close with this. You can always get as much as you want of Jesus, but you'll never get more than you want. You chew on that. You're as close to Jesus as you want to be. If you want to get closer, he says, bring it. Come on. You want more of his word? Look at it. Read it. Come on. You want to encounter Christ in a fresh way? Bring it. I got all to give. I'll give you as much as you desire, but I won't give you a drop more than you want. That's challenging. That means you give them something to eat. How many loaves you got? Five and two. Let's see what I can do with that.